The Cure with Amy Cabo. Life can bring many difficult situations, domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. Welcome, Amy Cabo and The Cure.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us today. I am Amy Cabo, and you're listening to The Cure. We are live every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and you can listen to us live on GodIsTheCure.com or later listen to the shows through a podcast. I'm also joined by Dr. Boris Nikolov, who is my partner in life and at work.
Hello.
This show deals with suffering and the tenacity of the human spirit, the will to survive, and the courage to keep moving forward, despite any obstacle, with the help of God and each other. Thank God it's Saturday, that it's even possible that I can do this show. Because during the week, we have been in trial. It's the trial where the state attorney is prosecuting Byron Mitchell of premeditated attempted murder. One of the dangers of social media was that this was a roommate that answered from Craigslist that nearly killed my daughter, Danielle Jones, once he moved in after 2 weeks on exactly Valentine's Day, 2016. We know what those 3 years have been like. I know what a severely damaged brain adult daughter is like. She had a miraculous recovery and appears altogether at first. But what I didn't know is that severe brain injuries get better over time, only to get bad again. And we really don't know what the future will be like. We know this is a lifetime commitment. And they say that time heals all wounds. But even if this one doesn't heal, even if I can no longer reach her, I can always pray. That is when I let go and let God. And I realize this trial is just a bump in the road compared to God's greater purpose. It may not be easy, but how do I cope? First, I remind myself that God is in control. I also know that if God has gotten me this far, there's nothing He and I cannot handle together. I have learned that no matter what the circumstance, God always provides. And if there weren't any challenges in life, there would be nothing to fix. Therefore, I'm grateful for the good times as well as the bad times, because I do try to keep focus on the bigger picture, and I try not to miss the forest for the trees, because there is so much more to life, and we only have one life to live. I don't know if we're living in borrowed time, or if I will die in my sleep tomorrow. I only imagine how people will remember me once I'm gone, which positively influences my behavior, of course. The trial should end a Tuesday. The news in Miami are covering it just like they did 3 years ago. And regardless the outcome, I'm extremely grateful that she is alive, and for the most part appears perfectly together. I share this with you because I want you to know that even though I may seem like I have it all together, doesn't mean that I do. Doesn't mean that life is rosy. And it's okay if you don't either. You're not alone. But I promise you, it's tolerable with God. But since we do speak of any kind of suffering and being there for each other, today we're going to speak about bullying in the workplace, sexual harassment, and assault. We'll start with bullying in the workplace. Do you know of someone who has a boss that acts like a schoolyard bully? Today we have a special guest, Dr. Cynthia Howard, that she can offer us some strategies. Dr. Cynthia Howard, a pioneer of the resilient mindset, works with professionals and organizations to get more done by doing less. She's the author of The Resilient Leader Mindset Makeover and Research Engagement and Stress While Pursuing Her Doctorate. A green belt in Lean Sigma, Cynthia focuses on value-driven solutions. Hi, Cynthia. Thank you for joining us. You're on The Cure.
Oh, thank you, Amy. It's great to be here.
Cynthia, I wanted to ask you, what are some of the signs that a person's boss is a bully?
Right. A lot of it has to do with how they make you feel. You know, if you're feeling intimidated or made to feel small, you know, a lot of times bosses are being tough, and that doesn't mean that they're a bully. You don't necessarily feel ashamed, or you don't feel like you're being pushed into a corner. So I would say some concrete signs would be, are they embarrassing you in front of other people? Are they using sarcastic humor to hide the fact that they're actually putting you down and trying to make you feel little so they can feel big? Maybe they're not telling you about certain meetings so that you end up either coming late to the meeting or not being prepared. And so in that way, you're made to look like you don't know what you're doing.
Okay, so this is not just bosses being tough, but there's something going on where the boss is not maybe treating you like the rest of the employees, or not letting you in on all the information, or somehow making you feel small, or that you're not an equal or worthy in any way, is what I'm understanding.
Yeah, there's a lack of respect, and you know, it's hard to tell. Just like you said in your intro, we don't know what's going on with people, so we always want to assume the best about people, but when they start to treat you in a way where you feel less than that's an indication that there's something else going on.
And it could be scary because it's a person in a position in power. I mean, it's your boss, and the person's job may be very, very needed, and it might be very important to them. So what would be the best way to handle the situation if such a situation should arise?
Well, you know, the most important thing, and it's the hardest thing, is to not take it personal, meaning don't assume the role of a victim, because that only makes it worse, and it puts you in a position where you then take on that identity of powerlessness, and it just continues and gets worse. So if you're in that situation, ideally you would look for another job, because it's not going to get much better. I mean, there are things you can do. Like, for example, I would keep a diary of exactly what happened, the date, the time, and the objective facts about what happened.
Okay.
Because when you do want to go to human resources, or if you want to go to someone other than your boss to talk about it, you want to make sure you have the facts. Keep the emotions out of it when you're talking to people at work, because unfortunately we're living in a world still where emotional expression isn't always appreciated. So if you come to someone in the workplace and you share how you felt, they may discount that.
Right.
You know, and part of the problem, too, has to do with how you personally take what happened. I mean, there are some people who have a very gritty personality. They're mentally tough. They're not going to necessarily respond to the bully in a way that lets the bully get away with it. You don't want to confront the bully, because they will always win, and it's not worth the fight.
Right. We want to be tolerant, but we don't want to be harassed either. You talked about some of the actions that we can do. And I think that's very helpful, because there's a lot of us that are struggling at work. We may go to work and we're not happy. We may feel like we're trapped in that situation. Well, maybe in today's world, there's a lot more opportunity. But it's important that we're happy, that we feel content where we are and when we're going to work. Cynthia, stay with us.
We will be right back with Amy Cabell and The Cure. And now we will continue with Amy Cabell and The Cure.
Welcome back. For those that are just tuning in, I'm Amy Cabo, and this is The Cure. If this is your first time tuning in, we're talking about the challenges at work, and we're joined by our special guest, Dr. Cynthia Howard. Cynthia, one of the ways that you suggested handling a boss was to not play a victim. I wanted you to go into that a little bit more, what you mean by that, because I believe that our outlook on things, our perception, is very important. And we do get what we put in.
Exactly. In fact, one of the most important aspects of our success is how we feel about ourselves and what we tell ourselves about us, because that's what gets conveyed. And the majority of bullies are, it's not necessarily men or women, but the majority of bullies actually seek out women, because I guess men aren't going to be bullied. There's a whole lot we could discuss in that conversation, because women tend to not have the confidence they need in themselves, so they take things personally. And I don't want to generalize, but those are what the statistics are. Most people who are bullied are women, and probably because you want to please, you want to make people happy, and definitely if it's your boss, you want to do a good job, because most of us need to work. So the reason I suggested, if you have a boss that is bullying you, to look for another job, because over time, and it doesn't take long, it's going to erode your self-esteem. It's going to completely rip into your confidence in yourself, making it even harder to leave that job and look for another one. So even if it seems like the best job for you, you know, prayer is the answer to a lot of problems that seem like there's no solution. And oftentimes you can, if you pray and you let go, let God, you can come up with an idea that you may not have had prior. So how we feel about ourselves really does matter.
Well, I guess what you're saying is that bullying is one of those character flaws that we don't want to deal with, because it could really play a number in our self-esteem, where we maybe lose a little bit of our self-worth if we allow ourselves to be treated in a bad way or not treated respectfully.
Right, and we can't control other people. What I'm suggesting is that you control how you perceive it. So if someone is doing that to you, even if it's your boss, even though you don't want to stand up to them, because that's just like standing up to a bear in the woods, you know, you may not win that argument. But what you can do is not internalize it and think, I must have deserved this somehow, I must not be good enough, what did I do to cause this person to do this? You didn't do anything. Even if you didn't do your job correctly, even if you made mistakes, that doesn't mean you deserve to be bullied. The bully has full responsibility for their behavior. Usually they're very insecure, even though they might come off as extremely strong and macho or
that's
have a
how
lot
they compensate.
Of bravado. They have a lot of insecurities, and they need people to feel small so they can feel big.
Exactly.
Cynthia, I wanted to change a little bit, not the topic, but kind of the other way. I'm a boss, so how do I not be a bully? Because, you know, this
right.
has to...
and I'm his boss. How do I not bully him?
There you go.
Well, you know, that's a great question, and the fact that you're even asking that question is really helpful, because there's a lot of pressure when you're running your own business or
yeah,
when you're running
and
a company.
There is very fine tuning, right? Exactly, where is the difference between bullying and just asking the people to do their job.
It's funny, we both work together.
Yeah.
I think he compensates with humor.
Sorry,
well, you know, that's an excellent way to lighten the load and to kind of reduce the pressure. I think one of the ways that bosses cannot be bullies is to develop better relationships with their people and to recognize that we're all people, we all like to, most people want to come to work and do a great job. So if they're not doing a great job, there's something that's preventing them from doing it. And rather than jumping to conclusions and thinking, oh, well, it's their attitude, think, is there something in the workplace that's getting in the way of them being their best and doing their best? Are there daily hassles that are wearing them down? And
exactly.
Have a conversation with them.
Right. I mean, yes, treat them like an equal, basically.
Well, but I mean, that's a complicated thing. I can't treat my employee as an equal because they won't have respect.
I take a kind approach.
Right, and yeah, so I don't think as an equal. I think the word I would use would be as a human being.
Okay.
You know,
okay,
you're the
that's
boss,
better.
Not, but
so it's
you're
good
both
that we don't
human
have a
being.
Zoo. Got it.
I see somebody called
and
in.
You like respect.
Okay.
You know, everybody wants to be respected, so I would. Try to find out what might be getting in the way of them doing a better job, and what are you being clear in your direction? One of the problems that I think bosses have, and this is grounded in neuroscience, you know, the brain has different networks. One of them is in gear when you're trying to get a lot of work done, and it clicks off the relationship network, so to speak. So sometimes when bosses have a lot of pressure, they can come off as being very tough and very short-sighted and maybe even not so nice because they're in that pressure mode.
Oh, I think I'm coming up like that. Can we get our employees to listen?
Well, yes. I think there's a difference. I mean, I think I can tell when somebody is in stress and stressed out. And I think you're right. It's important for us to be able to tell the difference from a boss that's being short or quick because he's got a lot on his mind and he can't really pay attention to what you're saying right now, than a boss that's treating you badly and, you know, just being mean to you or something like that. And
right, so the best thing to do is just to say to your employees, hey, I've got a lot on my mind, I need to tell you something and I need to make it quick.
Right.
That way, you're letting them know you're going to come off with something that sounds
short.
That's more of a demand, but you've given them notice.
Thank you. That's a very good point.
That's a great suggestion, and it's important. You know, it's important to clarify. Basically, that's what it is letting people know what's going on. Sometimes people are confused when they're left up in the air.
Yeah, because, you know, we live in a world with an 8-second attention span. I mean, between all of the notifications on our different devices and everything else in this global world that we live in, you don't even know if you have your employees' attention when you're talking to them. Most people walk around distracted.
Oh.
Right. We have been talking with Cynthia Howard, author and executive coach. Thank you for being on the show, Cynthia.
Well, thank you for having me, and all the best to you both.
Thank you. You can find more information on her on the website, eileadership.org, or on godissecure.com under guests. It was great having her. Cynthia, please come back again sometime.
We'll be right back with Amy Cabell and The Cure. And now we will continue with Amy Cabell and The Cure.
Hi, we're back. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Amy Cabo, and this is The Cure. You can listen to us every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern on your radio or on godisthecure.com. Now we are going to talk about sexual harassment and sexual assault. To kind of stay on the topic. And today's special guest will help us with these topics is Beverly Angel. She may be an angel, but it's spelled with an E. Beverly Angel is an international recognized psychotherapist, acclaimed advocate for victims of sexual, physical, and emotional abuse, and is the best-selling author of 23 self-help books. Her latest book is I'm Saying No, Standing Up Against Sexual Assault, Sexual Harassment, and Sexual Pressure. In addition to her professional work, Beverly frequently lends her expertise to national television talk shows. She has appeared in Oprah, CNN, and Starting Over, as well as many other TV programs. Beverly, welcome, and thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Beverly, why do women have such a difficult time saying no to sexual pressure or sexual harassment? Could you explain that?
Well, it's kind of a complicated problem, but basically there's still a lot of women who were being raised to be what I call nice girls, to, you know, just go along with authority, go along with, especially with what males want. They haven't really found their own voice, and so they have a difficult time, you know, really resisting when a man wants them to do something. They don't feel empowered enough to do it. Also, many have already been sexually abused in childhood, and they've lost their emotional strength, and they don't have tools to stand up for themselves. So those are two major reasons.
Well, I kind of know a little bit from self-experience. I was sexually abused as a child, and I understand where you're coming from, the difficulty to say no, because it almost becomes like a part of your life, and you just feel like you don't deserve any better, and that's just what happens, and you're
right.
Not even worthy of saving yourself from it, and you fall into that trap of thinking you're less of a person because you've been hurt.
Yes, that's absolutely right, and I'm glad you brought that up. Shame is a major reason why women don't say no. It's a major reason why women don't report when they've been sexually harassed or sexually assaulted. It's a huge problem. Women tend to blame themselves when they're sexually abused as a child. They blame themselves when they're raped as an adult. And our society tends to blame them.
I had an experience not too long ago where my daughter was on FaceTime with one of her colleagues from school. And this is a little boy, fourth grade. And so he made some he asked her maybe to take off her clothes or something like that. She felt very uncomfortable. Later on, she hung up the phone, told us about it. Had it very much in her mind, where she told the school about it the next day, told her teacher, and when I go to pick up my daughter, she's in tears, she's super upset, they've suspended her as well, because they say she's just as guilty, because the principal, and this is a Christian school, swore she should have pressed the red button and hung up the phone. How dare she not do what she expected her to do?
Right, yeah. We have a culture that doesn't like to conceive of anybody being a victim, especially a female of being a victim. And so we blame the victim because that makes us feel more comfortable. If we acknowledge that there are victims out there, then we have to acknowledge our own vulnerability. We have to acknowledge that we could also be a victim. So it's easier to blame the victim and to make them feel guilty for their own abuse than to actually defend a victim and acknowledge our own vulnerability.
Well, then let me ask you this. Is it that they go to the path of least resistance? Or...
Yes.
Yeah, right. I mean, because I just... They do. They go to the path of least resistance. The kid that is silent. The kid that doesn't put up a fight.
That somebody has been victimized. We all want to have the illusion of control. We all want to believe that we're in control of our lives. And when we're confronted with the reality that we are not always in control, we feel very uncomfortable. And it's easier to blame the victim than to just acknowledge that all of us are not in control and that all of us are vulnerable.
How about we tend to believe what we want, and a lot of times we don't want to believe the truth when it's ugly.
Yes. Yes. That's true. That's true too. Yeah. We don't want to face these things. Yes.
And because of that, it became a taboo, and people were afraid to talk about it. And because of that, this cycle just grew. It just grew because silence is what kept this going. And when one person sexually harasses or abuses one person, a kid, this is not isolated to just this one child. This person is sick. This person will continue. So the minute the child says something, or an adult that was abused by this person later, I mean, you can save the next person. You can save lives. Can you tell us the importance of reporting such things as soon as possible?
Well, as you said, you actually, if you report a crime like this, you then may prevent other people from being abused. Even if that person that raped you or sexually harassed you is not caught or is not processed legally, it's on record. And then the next time somebody reports, they're looked at even more carefully, more closely.
Yes.
And so it's really important to report. But it's also important for the victim to report. It can be very embarrassing. It can be very frightening, but can also be very empowering. It is like standing up and saying, no, I'm not going to put up with this. I'm not going to tolerate this.
Right. And it's very common when victims of childhood abuse that they get re-victimized. At least that was my case. I was pretty much victimized up until young adulthood. And I wish I would have known the things that I know now. But maybe you can shed a little light to how we can prevent being re-victimized.
Yes. Well, the major thing that I always advocate is that victims need to acknowledge their pain and suffering to themselves. Most victims want to just move on. They want to put it behind them. They don't want to have to face the pain. They get very little support because they don't think they're going to be believed, so they don't talk about it with anyone. They just hold it inside, blame themselves, feel ashamed. And they don't find a way to actually have any healing. And so they carry those feelings into adulthood, those feelings of shame, the feeling of being disempowered, and that sets them up for further abuse. Whereas if they could stop and acknowledge the suffering, provide themselves with self-compassion, and self-compassion is just simply saying to ourselves, you know, acknowledging what happened. I'm so sorry that that happened to you. You can talk to yourself in that way, or just acknowledge that was really painful. That was horrible. That should have never happened to me. And give ourselves some comforting and acknowledgement. It's amazing how powerful that can be.
Yes, Beverly, this is Boris.
Yes.
So you have impressive bio. It's also probably important for the survivors, I like calling them survivors instead of victims, to go to a psychotherapist, right? You would advocate that.
Oh, it's absolutely
Or a psychiatrist.
Important.
Yeah.
Yes.
Medication may be needed.
But most people don't.
Right.
First of all, a child isn't probably going to tell their parents, and even if they tell their parents, the parent probably is not going to take them to a therapist. Therapy is expensive, and it's embarrassing to go to anybody and admit what happened. So it is difficult, you know, for somebody, for a child especially, to get help. But there are hotlines that people can call, whether they're a child or an adult.
Oh, that's a very important point. Yes, thank you for saying that.
Yes, yes. And they will, you know, they have advocates who will talk to them. and assure them that it wasn't their fault and help give them some advice about how they can, you know, move on and what they can do to take care of themselves. So those hotlines are really, really important.
Right. What I don't get is how perpetrators always know who is the victim or who to pick. And I don't know if it's something that we're doing or they can just smell it in the air or what it is. But when we're back, we'll talk about that. If you have experienced anything similar, please call in 866-34-TRUTH or 866-348-7884. We would love to hear from you.
We will be right back with Amy Cabell and The Cure. And now we will continue with Amy Cabell and The Cure.
We're back. Thanks for tuning in. This is Amy Cabell, and you're listening to The Cure. You can listen to us every Saturday, 1 p.m. on the radio or GodIsTheCure.com. We are joined by psychotherapist Beverly Angel. For more information, it can be found on HealMyShame.com. Beverly, we were talking about how perpetrators know or can tell who's a victim or who's a survivor or who it is that can take advantage of. Could you tell me how that may be? Is it something that we do? Is it something that they know?
Well, sometimes it's because perpetrators will look for the most vulnerable. That may be, for example, for a child. That may be a child that's not being supervised by an adult, a child who's alone a lot. That's a main target, is someone who's not being, you know, properly cared for or watched by a parent.
So they're opportunists.
They're opportunists, absolutely. They also can sense when a child has been sexually abused already. That may be because of their posture or because they have low self-esteem, because they don't play with other kids. They can pick up on that also.
Okay.
But they're opportunists, but they'll try other kids. You know, they do grooming, as you probably heard about, where they'll test out a kid, you know.
Yes, I saw the Michael Jackson documentary. I saw it.
Yeah.
And it was very familiar to me, by the way. Very familiar.
It was what?
It was very familiar to me, by the way. Yes, I know the grooming part.
Absolutely. Yes, yes. So they'll try anybody. You know, they'll try any kid that's available, and they'll do their grooming process with, you know, offering them Coke and candy and spending time with them. Again, that's especially attractive to a child who has nobody who plays with them or who spends time with them. So the most vulnerable are the kids who don't have someone who's around them and taking care of them.
And then for the one that has been abused and has a low self-esteem, maybe slumping over, the body posture, the fact that they're not confident when they speak, or they don't speak too much, or they're quiet, or you think they would be easily intimidated, I guess this person or child or young adult, you want to empower. And I know that you've written 23 books of self-help. And trust me, I would love to know what I know now back then, and please let me know how we can help others. What's our role in this in society?
Yes. Well, I haven't written books for children, but there are many books out now, fortunately. There are many books on teaching children how to say no, teaching children, you know, what a perpetrator, you know, acts like, you know, teaching children to empower them with their anger. That's another thing I work with survivors is helping them to literally say no, helping them to express their anger at what they've already experienced. Most females and many males throughout their childhood have already experienced abuse in some way. It may not be child sexual abuse, but they've been grabbed, they've been watched, they've had people, you know, when they walk by on the street, make fun of them or talk to the, you know, yell at them about their sexual parts. Very few kids nowadays have not been exposed to abuse in some ways. And teaching those children how to say no and actually encouraging them literally to say no. Some people literally cannot say the words no. And so teaching them to do that is very, very empowering.
And it's also important that they know that it's wrong. Education is very important. I think education is key. I never knew what was happening was wrong. In fact, I thought I was the wrong one. And when I told my mother about the abuse at 7 years old and they kicked him out for 2 days, I thought, wow, I caused my family to fight. I'll never say anything again. And well, I knew not to say anything again. And our daughter, she's one day somebody came and tickled her in the belly and she goes, I'm not a kid anymore. You can't do that. And that's the kind of kid you want.
Right, right. Well, you're absolutely right. We need to better educate our children about the risks of sexual abuse and sexual assault.
And that is a major role. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Pardon me?
Yes.
Go ahead.
No, you go.
Yeah. It's even important to teach, like, college students who are going off to college, to talk to them about the risks. You know, young girls going off to college are very seldom ever told about the dangers of fraternity houses and you know, drinking too much and, you know, being at risk because they're drunk or being given a date rape drug. You know, they all need to be educated about all those risks.
Yeah, and there is actually right now they sell these test strips. Even you can test your drink in your club to
drugs,
see if there is ketamine or Rufinol.
Okay.
But let's go back to the no. That's a very powerful message anyway. So for adults, too. And your last book is called
Absolutely.
I'm Saying No, Standing Up Against Sexual
Right.
Assault, Sexual Harassment, and Sexual Pressure. And Ms. Angel, so where is the fine line here? Because yesterday, for example, I was reading something in Facebook, how they were shaming this man in the airplane who was asking the phone number of the lady in front of him, and then one of the other ladies in the airplane was posting, how come he's doing that, this is almost a sexual assault, sexual harassment.
Oh.
And they almost kick him out of the airplane. I mean, where is the fine line? I mean,
well, we don't want to be overly sensitive either.
it's not as fine a line as I've had a lot of sympathy for men nowadays, because good men, you know, are feeling afraid to just be friendly. And that's
right.
That.
Yes. Exactly. Okay. That's where I was going.
Yes. But there are a lot of men who do need to be educated and who need to be restricted. I don't know the situation if the woman was welcoming to him, had been talking to him, you know, had been encouraging him. Or if this came out of left field, you know, it really
I don't
makes
know the
a difference
either,
there.
Right.
Well, you know, guys, guys think women are always welcoming, always. We just have to set them straight and say no, thank you.
Well, no, but that's the point of the no. There you go.
Next.
yes. You know, we as a society need to educate men, and women need to educate men about what the boundaries are. They need to talk to them in detail, and men need to listen to what is okay and what isn't okay.
Right.
And then men need to share it with each other. When they see another man misbehaving, they need to speak up and let the other man know that that's not okay. So we're going through a real education process here. We shouldn't have to, obviously. But we are, and a lot of men have gotten away with things for way too long,
That's true.
They need to be educated.
Yes.
Or slapped in the face.
No, violence is not the answer.
No, we don't need to slap them in the face, but women need to have permission to say no, and they are now. You know, with the Me Too movement,
More
women have stepped forward and told their story. And more women feel empowered. They feel empowered because they've been believed for the first time.
Right.
And they're being supported. So now they are saying no.
And not only that, we're supporting each other, which is really important. But I think
Absolutely. Men
these days are really listening because there's so much pressure. So, of course, they're going to be listening. And I think they're quick learners. So there's hope.
Yes.
There's always hope.
Absolutely. We've made major steps in the last couple of years. Just in the last couple of years. So it's great.
Great. And I was reading on your website, you have a proprietary program for healing the shame of abuse. Can people just subscribe to your program online, or it needs to be just on your office?
I think shame was the biggest problem with me.
Yes, shame is the biggest problem with most people who are abused or harassed. I have the program listed on the website. I do offer it in workshops at times, and it's in most of my books, most of my recent books. The program is listed there.
Great.
And the program basically is made up of empowering people to release their anger, to learn how to say no, to provide themselves with self-compassion. That's really super powerful.
Nice.
It's primarily made up of empowerment through anger release and saying no, and healing the shame. Self-compassion is the antidote to shame. It heals shame. If we acknowledge our pain and give ourselves compassion for it, we're not going to be as likely to feel shame.
Sure.
So those two factors are the main factors.
I always say, if God loves us, why can't we love ourselves? Why not?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And unfortunately, a lot of victims of sexual abuse don't feel that God does love them.
That was me.
You know, they need... Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because you feel like you're such a bad person, you don't feel like you deserve God's help. Not you. You've been too bad.
Right.
You're too bad. That was, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And
so knowing that God loves them is really important for them.
I mean, that's what helped me get through with my shame. But there's also a lot of support groups. Not just, you know, your support system at home, but also in social media. These social sites, whether it be Facebook, they have support groups. They have different support groups that people do share their stories, and they're there for one another. And it's very comforting to know that you're not alone, because
absolutely,
I wrote my book, and I wrote it honestly, just because in case there's somebody out there that's been through a whole lot that thinks, okay, well, maybe they went through this, but nobody's gone through this. Now they can see they're not alone. I wanted to do that for
Absolutely.
Others.
Absolutely. That's wonderful. Yes. RAIN is a major website that is really, really helpful, and it is a place where people can call in and tell their story. And they also refer people to support groups in their area.
Nice.
And that's RAINN.org.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Beverly, for being with us. And
you're welcome.
Have a lovely evening, and welcome to come back anytime. You have great information.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for what you do also.
Thanks. And now I leave you with the National Association Survivors of Child Abuse Louisiana statement. What you have experienced in life does not define you. Therefore, let it refine you. Don't keep quiet to assist another's comfort. You are not the victim, rather the victor. Don't be ashamed of your story. It will inspire others to heal. It can be a key to unlock someone else's prison. Someone may be in need today to hear your story, to help them heal from childhood abuse, or to give them courage to leave an abusive relationship. Or someone may need to hear your story to know it's time to free themselves from the mental jail they've been in.